Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
And now I'm joined by David Hirsch, who's the founder of 21st Century Dads, an organization that supports and inspires fathers man to man in the modern world. One of their specific projects is the Special Fathers Network. So it's a mentor program for dads of kids with special needs. Today, we're going to be talking about their newly launched audiobook, On Losing a Child, which contains 12 chapters, each one from a father who has tragically outlived their child. And I'm sure there are many beautiful things to hear, but this is not likely to be a lighthearted, fun and frills chat. But I feel like the best way to start is just by starting. So, David, firstly, thank you so much for joining us today and talking about your audiobook.
Great to be with you, Anna. Thank you for the opportunity.
First of all, I'd like to just speak more broadly about the 21st Century Dads, just to get a broad overview. So when, why, and how did you start the organization or the foundation?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. So the backstory is that when I became a father for the fifth time, 27 years ago, I was looking for fatherhood resources here in the States and stumbled across some statistics that I thought were just objectionable. 24 million kids, 4 out of every 10 in America growing up in father absent homes. So from that point forward, I became an advocate more locally. And then 7 years ago, we started the 21st Century Dads Foundation. And the mission is to actively engage fathers in the lives of their children. So that's the 21st Century Dads Foundation. And more specifically, the Special Fathers Network, which is what we would refer to as our signature program, is a dad-to-dad mentoring program for fathers raising children with special needs. So when we started the 21st Century Dads Foundation, we evaluated some of the most difficult areas of fathering. And I'll just mention them briefly so put that in perspective. Raising children in high poverty areas like inner cities. The second is working with incarcerated dads, men who've been removed not only from their families, but society at large. The third is teen fathers, men who, in most cases, inadvertently become parents as young as, 12, 13, 14 years old. It's crazy. And then the fourth area, which is the one that we're going to be talking about, is fathers raising children with special needs. And that's not solo dads or single dads, right? We work with dads, who are married, who are never married, who are divorced, who are stepfathers, who are grandfathers, who are father figures. So we're just trying to meet men where they are. And what we realized is that there's very little infrastructure around teen parenting, mostly for moms, very few programs for dads. But we were warmly embraced by programs like Special Olympics. And I'll just mention that I live in the Chicago area. Special Olympics Illinois has 35,000 families. So there's a huge infrastructure around these special needs families. And that's what led us to create the Special Fathers Network. Our simple vision initially, 6-7 years ago, was we would just recruit this large group of seasoned fathers who have, say, 10 or more years of experience raising a child with special needs. And we would match them to the super young guys, you know, as soon as they could, or as soon as the child's diagnosed, you know, we'll, you know, have a superhero come into their lives and come alongside them. And we do have about 600 dads who have agreed to be mentor fathers, but it's proven to be a little bit more challenging to get in front of those young dads, right? At the time of diagnosis or shortly thereafter. So anyway, I can go into more detail, but I hope you get the backstory.
Yeah, no, and I would like to get into a little bit more detail, especially about the mentorship program and why, because you'd obviously identified a need for young fathers to have more support, or fathers in general going through any of their issues. Why did you decide that a mentoring program would be the way to go to meet that need?
Yeah, well, it's a really interesting question. The backstory on why we created the mentoring program was there's an organization, a U.S.-based organization called Immerman's Angels. It's a peer-to-peer cancer support organization. And the brief story is that they have about 8,500 cancer survivors, men and women, young and old, who are in remission. So they've had cancer for more than 5 years. And they match them with the cancer fighters, the individuals who more recently diagnosed, and they matched them 50,000 times, literally. And I thought, well, geez, you know, if they're doing that in the world of cancer, why don't we try to apply the same type of concept in the world of fathering? And so that was our vision, was to recruit an army, a small army of men who have experience raising children with special needs, and then match them. So let me just establish things fundamentally. And I think most of your listeners, men or women, would understand this. One of the diseases that men, virtually all men on the planet, suffer from is something that I refer to as testosterone poisoning, which limits our ability to ask for or accept help. We're going to figure it out on our own. You know, and the cliche is, you know, we're the gender that doesn't pull over and ask for directions when we're lost. And there's a lot of truth to that. And now I jokingly say, thank God for GPS. That's probably saved or preserved a lot of relationships. But if you fundamentally understand that's how men think, right, that we're going to figure it out ourselves. And we're talking about something very simple. How do we get from point A to point B in our vehicles? But you apply that same problem-solving approach to parenting, or parenting a child with special needs, somebody with Down syndrome or cerebral palsy or autism or rare disease. It's not meant to be so, right? That's not going to be fixed, right? You know, we're fixers. So I think that one of the things that we're trying to do with the mentoring program, and it's not just matching dads, you know, one-on-one, there's a whole host of different programs. What we're trying to do is just say, hey, we're better together. You don't have to do it on your own. And being a parent of a child with special needs, and this is speaking to your moms and your dads, can be very isolating. You feel like you're alone. Nobody understands, right? There's usually nobody in your immediate family, maybe nobody in your neighborhood, nobody you went to school with, nobody at work that could really appreciate, you know, what you're going through. So it's easy to isolate yourself. I think women are better at this, at reaching out for help and joining groups and volunteering and things. Men, I think, by and large, find that a little bit more difficult. So we're trying to meet that unmet need.
And here's a question that it's not necessarily about the foundation, but it's more from me to you as you know, a woman listening to this, because a lot of the topics that come up here on this lifestyle show and living in a patriarchal society at large is often how men can change their relationship with women, women's mental health issues. And there's a lot of support already for, as you said, you know, you're looking into this gap, and the support networks out there tended to be for the teenage mums that were struggling, and the women or solo mums. So how you've identified a challenge, how can women who want to support and love the men in their lives help support men who are struggling, you know, maybe those who are struggling to talk about their problems or anything like that?
It's a great question. So if I can paraphrase, the question is, what role do women play in assisting men to be more engaged, be more present? So when I think about fathering, I think of it as not one thing, but we've broken it up into four different areas. And I don't know that it's the be all end all, but it seems to make it a little bit easier to understand. So there's the, what society expects of fathers is that we're going to be financial supporters, right? We're going to provide for our families. And that's very fundamental. And I think that historically, that's really all we thought that fathers should do. If they could just do that, right, you know, moms can take care of everything else. And I know that when families are separated or divorced, you know, I know that a lot of women have said, hey, if he just paid his child support, it would be so much easier. I could do all these other things. But being a provider and raising the kids and school and healthcare and all that, it's overwhelming. I should mention, just as a sidebar, one of my passions for this has to do with the fact that there's way too many single moms raising kids. And I'm not just talking about kids with special needs, but just raising kids. My mom was one of those moms. She was a Chicago public school teacher for 35 years, and she raised me and my younger brother from my age six. So I have a full appreciation for some of the struggles and the challenges. And a lot of the work that we do is honor, in an honor of women who are, you know, trying to figure it out, just how to get from point A to point B and how to do everything. So we can do better, right, as a society by having more men being present. So we talked about being financially present. It's important for men to be physically present in their children's lives. The third is emotionally present. And then the fourth would be spiritually present. So if you can think about those as quadrants, four different components of being a father, we have a self-assessment tool that we provide. And this is not something that you do online because we're not gathering the data, but something that's in the form of a PDF and that some dad could download. Take the self-assessment tool in the privacy of his own home or office and get some immediate feedback in 15 or 20 minutes in each of these four areas. And then the idea is maybe there's a difference between what you thought and what this test or this assessment would indicate, and that you can maybe focus on that area. So instead of trying to say, I'm going to be the best dad I can be, just what does that mean? If you were to break this down into categories and say, okay, for example, I'm not a very emotional person. By occupation, I'm a financial advisor. I manage investments for high net worth and ultra high net worth investors. And I'm pretty convinced after 39 years of doing this job that our clients do not want somebody who's emotional, right? They want somebody who has nerves of steel, maybe like an air traffic controller type of, you know, no emotions, right? Somebody who's just going to be dialed in and, you know, be able to look at things objectively. So while that is a strength in my work life, not being emotional in my personal life is going to be a liability. So I know that that's something that I need to be more sensitive to or be focused on. That's just an example.
Absolutely. And really, thank you for giving such a thoughtful answer to that as well. And going back to it being sort of men to men, how do you match up the men to the mentors with your mentees?
That's a great question. So what I mentioned is that the mentor fathers have on average 10 or more years of experience. And we have 500-600 plus dads, mostly from around the US, but 12 different countries now, including the UK. And what we're looking for fundamentally is the type of special need to start with. It doesn't have to be, but if it's a family who's raising a young child and the recent diagnosis is autism, you know, at 18 months or 2 years or whatever period of time. And then autism isn't one thing. It could be verbal versus nonverbal. Sometimes there's other conditions within the autism. But what we're looking for is the same gender of the child, the same family structure. Is it an only child versus multiple children, married versus divorced, same socioeconomic group, same religious belief if known. And in a perfect world, you would match somebody in the same geographic area. So it's not a virtual relationship by text or phone or Zoom or Skype, but you could actually get together face-to-face for a soda or a cup of coffee and develop a more traditional relationship. And we have dads who are involved in different ways. There's monthly meetup groups, there's weekly mastermind groups, there's an annual conference, and we've done biweekly Zoom calls on the 24 topics that the dads told us are most important to them. And we have this very high level of expertise within the network. People that are not-for-profit leaders, you know, in the area of special needs, people who are authors, people who are TEDx speakers, people who are very gifted communicators. So we don't really have to reach outside the network. And by the way, when I say within the network, I don't mean exclusively men. I've interviewed for the, I forgot to mention, we have a podcast. It's the Special Fathers Network Dad to Dad podcast. The episodes come out on Fridays weekly. And tomorrow's episode will be episode 280. So of all the people that I've interviewed over the last 5 or 6 years now, I think I've probably interviewed a dozen and a half, two dozen women. Some of them are the moms that are raising the kids with special needs, but in most cases, they're healthcare providers or people that have important insights or self-advocates for that matter. One of the oldest people I've interviewed is a woman in the United States out in Colorado. Her name is Temple Grandin, and I don't know if you recognize the name, but she's an icon internationally within the world of autism. She's 74 years old. She's one of the oldest living people with autism. She's written 3 books. She's a professor at Colorado State University. And, you know, the insights that she has, right, to share with families raising a child with special needs are almost unparalleled because she's speaking first person, right? She's not just speaking from one parent to another, one mom to a mom or dad to a dad. She's speaking as the person who grew up with the autism, right? What does this look like from that perspective, which is invaluable. So anyway, I could blather on, but I hope that that gives you a flavor for, you know, what the matches are about and some of the resources that we've provided the dads.
Absolutely. And I'd love it if you could tell us also about any success stories in the mentorship program.
Oh my gosh, I wouldn't even know where to start. Last night we did our Wednesday night mastermind group call. So we have two groups, one on Tuesday night, one on Wednesday night. These are pilot programs, and we've been doing them for about 2.5 years. So there's a group of 8 guys that get together on Wednesday night weekly, virtually, and then we do an annual retreat. And we've been doing these annual retreats for 3 years. The last one was in Chicago, before that it was in St. Louis, and then before that it was Nashville. And this might not mean anything to a lot of UK listeners, but you know, these are different cities around the US, mostly in the Midwest, making it as easy as possible for people to travel, not as long a distance. And so these guys have gotten to know each other really well over the last 2.5 years. And there are a couple of younger guys that came into this mastermind group concept. So if you can envision a 75-minute meeting every Wednesday night, broken into 5 different segments, we start 15 minutes or so with wins, trying to start the meeting on a positive note. And let me tell you, each of these guys to a person, if they wanted to, could play the hardship Olympics, right? And talk about all the difficulties that they've experienced over the last week, 100% for sure. But that's not what the purpose of the meeting is, right? We're trying to remind each other that there's positive things going on in each of our lives. And we reflect on what's transpired over the last week. Then the second 15-minute segment is reviewing a book. We'll review 6 books every year. And these are all authors within the network, men and women who have written books, either straight up on special needs, about leadership, about the importance of family and values and things. And we'll spend 15 minutes reviewing a chapter or two of the book. And then when the 8 weeks goes by, we actually do a Zoom call with the author. So it's really one of the highlights of the year is to be meeting with the author whose book we've been reviewing and get to know them and get a little backstory on the book and a little bit more than, you know, maybe what's in the book itself. And then the going back to the meetings, the third and the fourth segment of these weekly meetings is something we call Dad in the Middle. So Dad will share a challenge that he's had either this past week or something that's been going on, either with a child, with his spouse, something at work, something, you know, to do with his health, or all the above. And then the last 15 minutes of the meetings are just sort of a wrap up and looking at the week ahead. So your question was, can you share some success stories? There's been a couple guys. Oh, by the way, I should mention, not only are they making a time investment, that they're making a financial investment. On average, they're paying $100 US a month, $1,200 a year. So this is not, you know, your typical, hey, I'm just some guy off the street and I've got a kid with special needs. These are people that are very intentional. They're willing to make an investment of their time as well as some financial resources. So they've got some skin in the game. I guess that's the way to think about it. And We've seen a metamorphosis with some of these younger guys. So the age range is from about 30 to 75 in the group. So it's not just for a certain age group. So that means the kids range from age couple, 3 years old to maybe 30, 35 years old. A lot of wisdom, you know, with the older guys in the group. The older guys would tell you that this is just as meaningful for them to be able to share what their experiences have been, be reminded about the importance of being in community, like we're talking about. And the younger guys have gone from the deer in the headlights to being really angry and in denial about their circumstances to embracing their child for who they are and making the most of the situation. And the ultimate, and I've heard dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of men say, I would not have asked for a child with special needs, but knowing everything I know now, I wouldn't change anything. Oh. Very profound statement. Very profound statement.
Yeah, that really is. Thank you so much for sharing it. And now on to specifically the audiobook on losing a child. This isn't the first, actually. It's part of a series of audiobooks. So how do you choose the topics? And tell us a bit about the series.
Yeah, so this is the fifth in the series. The first audiobook was on autism. The second was on Down syndrome, then rare disease, then cerebral palsy, and then now on losing a child. And these audiobooks are simply a compilation of, like you'd indicated at the top end of the interview, 12 different chapters. So there's 12 interviews. What we're doing is we're taking the first audiobook as an example, or the first 12 interviews that we did on autism. So we stripped off the intro and the outro, you know, all the little messages that are in between. So it's just a raw interview. And as opposed to cherry picking like 12 out of the first 70 or 75 autism interviews, we just literally took the first 12 autism interviews, packaged them in the form of this audiobook. And the purpose or the thought behind it was, as the number of podcasts became larger and larger, it became increasingly difficult for individuals who wanted to find the episodes that were more germane to their situation. So we thought, well, why don't we just package the autism interviews together? So that's what we did. And we picked one of the 12 dads to do the introduction. And I'll just mention that, and again, this might not mean anything to your UK audience, but one of the dads, episode number 5, so, you know, somebody who was one of the guinea pigs with the podcast, is a fellow by the name of Joe Mantegna, the actor. Most people recognize him because he's been on Criminal Minds for the last 15 years, but he's got over 100 Broadway, TV, movie credits to his name. In fact, for people who are Simpson followers, you know, Bart Simpson, Joe is the voice for Fat Tony, one of the characters on The Simpsons. So anyway, he's very well recognized in the States, and he has an adult daughter with autism. I think Mia must be 34 or 35 now. And he is just so down to earth about this. Doesn't wear his child's diagnosis on his sleeve. He's very open and transparent about his circumstances. So anyway, the format for the audiobooks is 12 chapters, and then one of the 12 dads is selected to do the introduction. And, you know, we're not making any money by selling audiobooks, but we're just trying to, you know, put these resources together in a format that would be more useful for our intended audience. So the first book, audiobook, was on autism, then Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, rare disease, then cerebral palsy. And then the most recent book that just came out this past month is on losing a child. Sadly, with the 250 plus interviews that I've done, you know, the story doesn't always end happily. And when I say end, the story goes on, but the child's life has been shortened. So one of the situations, and this is for all parents, not just parents raising children with special needs, is that our greatest fear is that we're going to lose a child. A child would die before we would. And when you have a child with special needs, in most cases, many cases, they're medically fragile, right? So, you know, if something happens, they get the flu, they could be very vulnerable to passing. So this audiobook was the first 12 episodes we did on losing a child. And some of them lost their child at the time of birth, some, you know, as a toddler, as a teenager, and some into their 20s. And like you'd said, Anna, the subject matter of this book is a little heavier, right? Because, you know, the loss of a child, but no less important because there are a lot of parents that have lost children. Most of them, I would say, are probably like miscarriages, right? You're pregnant and the pregnancy wasn't viable. And, you know, that's a loss as well. That's not what we're focused on with this audiobook, but, you know, there is a loss that takes place. And I think whether it's the loss of the child's life or maybe more broadly, when you take a step back and look at all these audiobooks, one of the common themes is grieving the loss of the life that you had anticipated for your child, grieving the loss of the life that you anticipated, the relationship that you would have with your child. And there's a famous poem. It has to do with going to Holland. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the poem, the short story on it is that travelers were anticipating a trip to England. They get on the airplane and the pilot comes over the loudspeaker and he says, "I'm sorry that our trip's going to be diverted. We're going to Holland." And they're like, "Well, wait a second. I wasn't planning on going to Holland. I've been reading the books and anticipating all the things that we're going to do in Italy. And, you know, all these things that, you know, people look forward to. And then your plans change, right? Not because you decided to change your plans, but they've changed." And then the concept is, oh, Holland's got some interesting things that I wouldn't have thought of. And, you know, you sort of make that adjustment. And this is a metaphor for what we're talking about with having a child with special needs, which is that wasn't what I was planning. That's not what I hoped for. But once you embrace the circumstances for what they are, you can still lead a very full and meaningful life. Obviously, in some cases, with some serious adjustments, if your child's blind or deaf, or they can't walk, or they can't talk, or they're not potty trained, you know, there's some pretty consequential hurdles that you have to adjust for. But again, what our more seasoned dads would tell you is that, you know, life goes on, right? And if you're looking for the negative of it all, that's not going to be hard to find. But I think those that are more disciplined are trying to figure out, well, what can we do? What can my child do as opposed to what they can't do? And I think it's really important. The last thing I'll say is that having worked with these families raising kids with special needs, I witnessed that, and this goes for moms and dads, it's not just about the dads, that these individuals are more humble, less arrogant, and less selfish. And what does the world need? We need more people who are more humble, less arrogant, and less selfish. And I think that that's what the parents in the world of special needs and disability have in spades, is that they're just some amazing human beings who are not looking for sympathy or pity, but they're just looking to be seen and understood. And that's all they want for their kids, is to help reach their full God-given potential.
Okay. And finally, I'd like to ask to anyone listening who might be interested in the latest audiobook on losing a child, what would you hope for them to get out of the series or the podcast?
Yeah, well, I think that with the most recent audiobook, you don't have to have lost a child, but maybe you know somebody who's lost a child. And, you know, you're trying to figure out, well, what can I do for them, right? Other than send a card saying, "Oh, so sorry for your loss," just being physically present in someone's life if they've lost a loved one. We're not just talking about losing a child, but just lost a loved one. Okay. And I think of this most recent audiobook and the other audiobooks for that matter as an opportunity to say, "Hey, I was thinking about you. I ran across this resource. I thought you might get something from listening to these inspiring stories," right? Told from a dad's perspective on, in this case, losing a child or rare disease or cerebral palsy or autism or Down syndrome. And I think that, you asked earlier, what can moms do? You know, what can grandmas do, right? Because they're typically the advocates, right? They're the ones that are gathering resources for their family, for their husbands, for the father of their child if they're not married. or for their sons and son-in-law, excuse me, for their sons and son-in-laws, you know, if they have grandchildren. So I think that moms can play a very important role in helping steer the type of resources we're talking about to the male, positive male, adult male role models in their family.
Great. Well, thank you so much, David. And your audiobook can be found on Audible or and any other places where people can listen to it. I was going to say get their hands on it, but that's not quite right, is it? Get their ears on it.
They get their ears on it, right? But it's on Amazon, which is, you know, part of Audible, or I should say Audible is part of Amazon. And they could also go to the 21stCenturyDads.org website, not only for information on all the audiobooks, but all the programs we've discussed and then some.
Thank you very much.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I got to say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.